Good afternoon. I'm Warren Giroux, an independent senior consultant to Sightline Wealth Management, and want to welcome our listeners to our first in a series of Smart Money Manager discussions. Today, it is my pleasure to introduce John Hutchison of Trez Capital, who is the president of Central and Southwestern U.S. and a member of the executive committee of Trez Capital. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Trez, they specialize in short-duration mortgage lending in both Canada and the U.S. Welcome, John, and thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to speak to us.
Thank you, Warren.
First, John, can you explain to our listeners specifically what type of lending that Trez does in your home state of Texas?
Well, we are primarily focused on residential loans in the residential world. Financing for lot developments, where a developer develops lots, sells them to builders, who then build a home, and then they sell the home buyers. We also do financing of multifamily projects. We do. There's a new product that's emerging. Called single family for rent, where an entire subdivision, 50, 80, 100 homes, is built for the intention of leasing out the homes, not selling them. That's a really fast emerging product line here in the United States. We also do lot banking, financing and lot banking and land banking. And so our primary business is in residential. Now, we do residential lending throughout Texas and in other states. We've got loans in Utah, Arizona, Colorado, Tennessee, along the East Coast. We do some there as well, even though it's not specifically in my territory. We look to loan into high growth markets, high population growth, and high job growth. And, for example, in Dallas-Fort Worth, in the last 10 years, there's been more than 1 million new jobs created, net new jobs. We're averaging somewhere around 100,000 a year for 10 consecutive years. That's just an example. I mean, that's fastest growing market in the country that we do business in. But all the cities that we do business in, Phoenix, Denver, Salt Lake, Houston, all have high growth numbers for both jobs and population growth. So we take the position that, people are going to live somewhere, and we try to do loans where to provide them with housing, whether it be housing for rent or housing for purchase. We also focus on, within that framework, we focus on affordable products more than we do luxury products. In single family, we focus on first-time move-up buyers. And in multifamily apartments, we focus on three-story garden-type walk-up apartments without elevators and relatively simple, so that they're more affordable and they're built in the suburbs. We have not done any high-rise apartments. There aren't really a lot of high-rise apartments in Texas, other than in urban areas. Very expensive. It's a whole different pricing strategy than what we want. So we try to stay at the lower end of the price pyramid, and that's where we feel there's more renters and more buyers. So that's what we focus on.
John, can you
go ahead?
I was going to ask. Can you explain sort of the lending process? In other words, when a borrower comes to you, are you lending the money to buy raw land? Are you where are you in the timeline of development process?
Let me go back to the first question for a minute. We have made loans in other areas. We have made a few retail loans. We have three. We have three hotel loans, limited service hotel loans. But by and large, we're like I said, the vast majority, like 80% of our loan of our money that we have funded, or not even more than that, maybe, is for residential. Now, what does the borrower have to go through? Is that your second question?
Yeah, sort of the process. And also, are you actually loaning money for buying land, or are you down the timeline? In other words, the borrower has to buy the land and has to fund the land out of his own pocket or other sources, and then you get involved in the actual development at some point of the lot. What point do you get involved in?
Well, when we do multifamily apartments, typically the borrower buys the land. Depending on how expensive it is and how large the deal is, that kind of dictates how much equity they have to put in. But typically, when we close the loan with a multifamily developer, we fund $1,000 at the initial closing with the purchase of the land. Once the developer has his equity in, then we start funding construction draws. Now, that's relatively simple because there's usually only two parties involved, us and the borrower developer. It gets a little more complicated when it's a lot development project. With those, there's a third party involved, and that's the builder. Let's just say it's one builder in the project to make it simple. The builder typically will put in earnest money into the project that is delivered to the developer at the closing of the land. So when the land is purchased, depending on how expensive the land is, how big a tract it is, the land, the developer's equity would go in, the earnest money from the builder would go in, and we may fund some money to buy the land, or again we might have a nominal funding of just $1,000 so that we can record our lien, and then we fund development as it goes forward. Here it's the earnest money is substantial. If the builder is going to buy $10 million worth of lots during the life of the project, in Dallas-Fort Worth, the typical earnest money deposit is between 15% and 20%. So the builder would put up $1.5 million to $2 million in earnest money, and in Houston and some other cities, it's more like 10%. But even that would be $1 million. Typically would loan on a multifamily or lot development project somewhere between 75% and 80% of cost, so long as the loan to value is, you know, typically 70% or lower. So the money the earnest money, the developer's equity would all go in before we make any substantial funding of the project. The land will be zoned for its intended use. We don't take entitlement risk. So the zoning, the developer has taken care of all of that before we make him a loan, and he buys the land. So that's typically the structure as it relates to what we fund. If it's a build to rent project, then it's a little bit different, because there we will also fund the cost of the vertical construction of the houses. Whereas if it's a lot development program loan, we would simply fund the development of the lots and not anything to do with the houses. The home builder will pay to build the houses with its own financing.
Now, when a borrower comes to you with a lot development project, do you have any say in who the builders are, what type of houses are putting up, or are you just sort of evaluating each project as it's presented to you without any input?
No, the builders are subject to our approval. If we think a builder is inept, we would tell the developer we won't fund a loan with that builder because we don't think they're a good operator. We also do pay a lot of attention to the price point of the product that should be built in the project. Some builders are very good at building luxury homes, and they're not very good at building more affordable homes, typically because they overdo it and their value formula isn't right, and they end up, not making money, and then they pull out of the community, and everything gets, turned on its head. No, we do pay attention. The contracts with the builders are subject to our approval. any amendments to the contracts are subject to our approval. The product is typically, we don't get into a lot of detail on the product necessarily. We leave that to the developer, but we do, and the builder, but we do want to make sure that that builder is capable of building the necessary product in order to be successful in the project. But so we have a lot of say in what goes on in terms of the builder, the price point, and the product that's built. I mean, we can get involved in the plans themselves, but typically we don't try to dictate how the plan should be designed.
So what happens in the case of an impairment or default? What exactly is the process there where you find a builder or you find a developer who is for some reason is not able to make the timely interest payment or capital repayment? What happens there in Texas? How does it work?
Well, in Texas, we have the most favorable creditor laws in the country in terms of foreclosing. And if our borrower defaults, our documents are typically drafted with a very short notice period if they default. And if they don't cure within that 5 to 10 day period, we can post for foreclosure. In Texas and in many other states, but Texas being the most favorable for creditors, we can post for foreclosure 21 days prior to the first Tuesday of a month. So you can, depending on how the timing of things work out, from a date of default to the date of a foreclosure could be as little as 35 days. And the foreclosure is not judicial. You don't have to go to court. It's held on the steps of the courthouse. And typically nobody bids because it's a bit high risk for somebody other than the lender to take to try to bid at a foreclosure sale. And because they don't have time to review the title and get title insurance and everything. So typically the lender will take control of the property. And then if someone wants to buy it, the lender will be marketing it and through brokers or whatever. And then somebody can buy it from the lender. As it relates to the builder, if a builder defaults, that's a bit different because we don't have a direct contract with that builder. The developer has to decide what to do initially. And if the developer wants to, let's say, grant some sort of accommodation to the builder, let's say the builder was supposed to buy, have $500,000 worth of lots and only was able to come up with $400,000 in cash, the developer might say, well, let's give them an accommodation. We'll give them a little extension on this other $100,000 that they need to take. And they have to come to us to get our consent to the accommodation. Typically, we would grant it unless we think that, there's some games being played, and give the builder a chance to get their, sell some more houses so they can take their lots down. If a builder just decides they're not going to take any lots and it's going to leave a community, they forfeit their earnest money that they deposited with the developer, and then the developer needs to go out and find another builder. That builder would be subject to our contract, would be subject to our approval. The developer needs to, figure out what he's going to do about paying our interest, and they'd have to come up with that money themselves. Typically, in this market that we've had and continue to have, that we have had for the last six, seven, 8 years, and it's continuing today, when a builder pulls out of a community for whatever reason, it doesn't necessarily mean it's an unsuccessful community. It means you have an unsuccessful builder. That could be because the builder doesn't really have a good operation. Their salespeople that they had in the community might not be very good. They might have built the wrong product. They might have priced it wrong. There's a lot of reasons why a builder might be unsuccessful that doesn't have anything to do with the quality of the project. And there's no shortage of builders that want to come in to replace the builder who pulled out. So then you'd go through the cycle again. That builder would put down earnest money. That earnest money would be paid down by the developer, would be paid down on our loan. We would take it as a principal payment. and the new builder would build a model and, you know, start to sell houses. So there's some of the biggest builders right now, Pulte Homes and D.R. Horton, have made it known that if any lots become available, they want to buy them. So they're looking to increase their market share if some of the smaller, less well-capitalized builders are having problems and, you know, can't continue to buy lots because they might not be, their cash flow might have fallen off here in the last few months. So it's that's typically the process.
Now, you said in earnest money, in the case of a builder who's not able to take down his lots, if a new builder came in to take over his responsibility or his obligation, that earnest money would go to Trez. In the original situation where a builder comes in on a new development, where does this earnest money go? Does it stay with the developer, or does part of it go to Trez, or how does that work?
Well, it depends on the purchase price of the land and how much the earnest money is and how much the developer is their own capital they're putting in the deal. The money goes into the project from the builder. It doesn't go into an escrow account. It would either be used as part of the purchase price for the land, or it would be paid to us, and it would be, we would, you know, basically then we would lend it back out to the developer, but it would be, you know, it either goes to us or goes into the purchase of the land. And so the money's in the deal. And if the builder does default and pulls out, they don't get their money back.
Okay. Do you, you've been in Texas, or you've been Trez has been lending in Texas for quite a few years now. Have you had any significant or any defaults in any of your projects?
As of the end of last year, we had loaned out $3.3 billion out of my office. And I think we did $250 million in the first quarter. So let's just say $3.5 billion. In that period of time, we've had one loan that was for about $6 million that we foreclosed on the developer. We had that we then took possession of the loan. We had another one that was for just a couple of million dollars that we foreclosed on the developer, but right after we foreclosed, the developer got a loan and bought the property back from us, made us whole, paid all our interest and expenses and everything. So we've only had one, what I would call a real foreclosure, take possession. Then we had to remarket the property, and that was the loan in about $6 million that I mentioned. That, other than that, we've had no serious problems.
Okay.
I think we sent out default notices. We had a loan recently. It was about $8 million, and the developer wouldn't listen to me when I told them not to try to put a certain builder in their project, but they wanted that builder, and the builder kept stringing them along. And yeah, we got this problem and that problem, and we'll sign a contract. We won't sign a contract. And eventually told them, they reached their maturity date, and I said, I said, just pay us off. So I don't want to continue in the deal. The builder signed the contract, but I'd have enough of them. So they paid us $500,000 down, and they're going to pay us off in 60 days. And so that we'll just get paid off on that project. Let them go to, they've got another lender that they'll go to. But really, that's about it.
I was just wondering, yesterday we had some pretty depressing news when it came to housing starts in the U.S. They fell around 30% in April after a fall of 22% in March. I was just wondering if you had any feeling, or how is it going in Texas? Are you seeing housing starts falling off a cliff, or are you seeing them on the rise? Are they flatlining, or what's the experience been that you've seen so far on the ground?
Okay. Here's the situation when you get into the national numbers are not really indicative of what goes on in the markets that we're in. Which is not to say that the markets that we're lending into aren't affected by this COVID-19, but the numbers didn't go, have not gone down like that. They say this thing started on March 15th. Let's use that as a starting date for when people started reacting to this. Going into March, the market was just booming on house sales in virtually every market that we do business in. Then it got a little tenuous the end of March. Then April started out, you know, everybody thought the world was going to end because nobody could see, you know, nobody had much visibility. So April was spotty. But starting around May 15th, on every Monday and Tuesday, I would call builders that are building in Dallas or Houston or, you know, Austin, San Antonio particularly, and I would find out what the house sales were in the community. I would ask developers who have a lot of communities that they're selling lots into what are home sales, because most developers track the home sales of their builders, because that's the ultimately that's the end of the pipeline, is, you know, when they sell the homes. So and it's been getting better and better and better. In April, there were several builders that I called, and they sold more homes in April of 20 than they did in April of 19. A lot of what you're seeing is dependent on the market. You know, in, if you're talking about, you know, somebody's talking to you about starts nationally, and they've got Chicago in there and Minneapolis and New York and Connecticut and all these other states and cities that are really hurting, that drags the whole number down. But in Dallas, for example, I don't have April start number, but in Dallas-Fort Worth, in the first quarter, we did 10,000 starts, which was 25% higher than what was done in the first quarter of 2019, where we did 8,000 starts. So the last 2 weeks have been just booming in sales. And I track really closely Houston and Dallas and Austin, because that's where we have, well, I don't know that we have any loans into San Antonio right now. That's where we have large loans. Builders are taking their lots down. As you may know, Warren, I think we've talked about this. We also develop lots through an affiliate called Amalgamated Development. And we don't use Trez cash. You don't borrow money from Trez funds for that. That's all separate. Our lots, we have two large projects. Each of them have about 1,000 lots, you know, over the life of each project. And the builders are ahead of takedowns. As a matter of fact, we have builders closing today for lots that they don't have to really have to close till the end of June, because there's, and we have some closing tomorrow that they don't have to close to the middle of June. So they're selling houses more. Now, what happened with housing starts? Another thing that did affect housing starts is once we got into this pandemic, builders stopped building spec houses. Typically in the spring, builders build a lot of specs because they want to be able to deliver houses before the school year starts to people who are relocating into the market. Well, as soon as the pandemic hit, builders stopped building specs. A spec house is a house that is built without a buyer under contract. There's two categories of houses. There's build jobs and specs. The build jobs are referred to as build jobs. Those are the ones that when a builder starts the house is under contract to be bought by a buyer who's made all of his selections and all of his upgrades and everything. And then there's spec houses that the builder just builds because he wants to have inventory available for buyers who are typically relocating and moving into the area. Well, they stopped. So that had a big effect. I don't know how much of an effect it had, but I can assure you it had a big effect, that because builders stopped building specs and would only build jobs. And so that had an impact. That had an impact nationally, including the cities that we loan into. But the market is not down like that where we do business, Warren. Not anything close to that. I would say builders in April probably were 10 to 15% below what they did last year. But the wonderful thing about home building and financing lots is that if a project gets slow, it doesn't mean that builders are going to stop taking lots down and they're going to stop making and providing cash flow to the developer, who then pays it over to us. It may mean that they don't take as many lots. Maybe instead of taking 10 lots a quarter, they take 7 lots a quarter. But that's still a substantial payment. The other thing about the market today, builders, particularly the public builders, have never had more liquidity than they have right now. And even the large regionals have a lot of liquidity. Builders have just made a lot of money the last 5 or 6 years, and they have more liquidity than they've ever had. So most of the builders that are in the projects that we finance are either large public builders like Pulte, D.R. Horton, Lennar, Beezer, or they're large regional builders like Highland, First Texas, David Weekly. They're very large, larger than a lot of public builders, but they're just privately held. So, you know, those national numbers are not really indicative of what we're experiencing.
Okay. Normally, what would be a size of a project down there? I mean, when you look at a project, you obviously need a certain size to make it worth your while to do the funding. So are you looking at lot development of, say, 200 lots, or are you looking at only 1,000, or what kind of size are
if it's a 100 lot project, it's usually going to be done in one phase of development. If it's over 100, you know, 200, 300, 400 lots, that there's usually the developer buys land that is going to be developed in phases. Now, we have made loans to developers, particularly down in Houston where the deals are bigger, where there might be ultimately 2,000 to 3,000 lots developed. But we do it in a way where we only commit to basically finance the land acquisition and the first phase of development that might be 300 lots. And then when the developer wants to go on to the next phase, then they have to meet certain conditions. We'd have to modify the loan to add additional principal for them to borrow. They'd have to have the lots under contract. They'd have to have all the budgets approved by us. And then we'll continue on. We do like those long-term projects because we take it, we commit to it in bite-sized chunks. We don't commit to a 10-year project to loan money over 10 years. We'll do it in 2 and 3 year increments. And if we don't like the way it's going, we just won't fund the next phase. But it gives us a real good pipeline of business with developers we have confidence in and projects we have confidence in. We've been financing a developer in Houston for about the last six years called Lantejas. They're the largest developer in Houston. They last year delivered about 3,000 lots. This year they probably will hit that number again. And we have 5 or 6 large projects with them. And some of them we've been in for 5 years, but we didn't make a 5-year loan. We made a 3-year loan, which has now been extended because they put another phase of lots on the ground. So it varies. I mean, I would say we typically don't do less than 100 lots, and, you know, then we go up from there. But the loans are either lot development financing is usually 3 years, and a multifamily is 2 to 3 years. The idea in a multifamily is to get it built and then get it stabilized, and then they want to pay us off because our interest rates are higher than they would get from an insurance company or a bank for a longer term loan. Our interest rates on lot development, we have never loaned money below 10%. And right now our loans on our books range from 10% to 14% for first lien lot development financing. It's the highest rates that we can get. You can't get that in multifamily or retail or office or industrial. You just can't get those rates. So,
So, given what we've seen here in the last, say, quarter or so, are you seeing an expansion of the opportunity going forward for lenders like Trez and yourselves
Oh
specifically?
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We stopped lending on around March 15th. So we haven't made a new loan since then because we want to make sure we have sufficient capital for to answer draws and things. So we haven't loaned any money out, but we have a lot of business where people are waiting for us to open our doors again and do loans. Another thing I want to make sure is that you understand is that most of our business is repeat business. People like to come back to us. We have a very experienced team. We know what we're doing. We know, in many cases, we know the developer business better, more than the developer borrowers do. And so we are easy for people to deal with in the sense of understanding their project, solving issues, and getting things done. We don't have, junior bank officers who are trying to figure things out and then have to pass things upstream in order to find somebody who's knowledgeable. I mean, the team that we have has 150 years or more of experience in development financing. So we are very people are very comfortable coming back to us time and time again, and we like that. And that's our principle. We have a business. We're not trying to do one-off loans with people. We're trying to, have relationships that go on for years. We've had, we financed the largest developer in Dallas and have for about 8 years. We financed the largest developer in Houston, and we have now for about 6 years. And then there's a lot of other ones that we do multiple loans with. So
Well,
that's a big
thank you
part of
very
our
much,
business.
John. In closing, is there anything else you think that our listeners would like to know or understand about what you do and how you do it?
No, I just want you to, but our focus has been and will continue to be in residential, the products I mentioned, multifamily lot development, single family built for rent. That is still the sweet spot in the real estate world in the United States, in the markets that we're in. Interest rates are very low right now. I know it may be hard for my Canadian brothers to understand, but we do 30-year mortgages here. And right now, you can get a 30-year fixed rate mortgage for about an interest rate of 2.75. And economists who I have confidence in have a good reputation, feel that interest rates are going to be between 2.5 and 3% for a 30-year mortgage for the foreseeable future. And there's three things that drive houses, that drive the home building market. One is interest rates, the other is consumer confidence, and the third is job growth. Well, right now consumer confidence, might not be what it was, certainly not what it was 3 months ago, but interest rates are lower than they ever been. This is a historic low for interest rates in the United States for a 30-year mortgage. And if you want a 15-year mortgage, your interest rate will be even lower. If you want a 3-year adjustable rate mortgage, your interest rate will be even lower than that. So 2.75, a friend of mine and his son got a mortgage last week, 30 years at 2.65. So I'm using 2.75 as my example. But, and so if mortgage rates stay down, jobs are going to be coming back. Consumer confidence will improve, I think, as this thing unwinds. So many believe, and it has been the case in recessions in the past, that home building has led the country out of recessions. That didn't happen coming out of the Great Recession of the late of 2009, but the expectation is that it's going to happen this time because we were in a the market was booming. Millennials were buying houses. Everybody's been waiting for several years for millennials to buy. They started really moving into the market late last year. The spring was really strong up until March 15th. And, you know, we expect that to come back. And when this thing starts to unwind, we financed the project in the Dallas area, and D.R. Horton, so first-time buyer community. It's got a nice brand-new elementary school, swimming pool, jogging trails, and they sold 11 houses last week. And, you know, it's the ones with Lantejas down in Houston are having an unbelievable sale. That's another thing I should comment on. The oil price decline has not had a dramatic effect in Houston. Now oil's back up to $32, $33, but it did have an impact, you know, 6 years ago when it went down, and there were a lot of layoffs in Houston, but we had no problems with our communities that we financed in Houston. Houston is a strong, resilient city with a diversified economy, but a lot of people were laid off. Job growth in Houston got down to near zero, and then it's come back. Last year, I think they had 60,000 new jobs in Houston. And so right now, it hasn't had an impact of any significance. So we hope that will continue. Frankly, one of the reasons I think there's a lot fewer jobs in the energy industry in Houston than there was 6 years ago. A lot of the people that were laid off were never rehired into their jobs. So companies, you know, may do with fewer people. So we don't look at Houston as a troubled market for because energy prices are low at this point.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you, John, for taking the time and appreciate your insight on the housing market and the lending market, the borrowing market in Texas and with Trez. So if any of our listeners would like further information on Trez or the Smart Money portfolios, please reach out to your Sightline advisor. I want to thank everyone for taking the time to listen. Thank you.